Hey everyone, welcome back to Wild and Unprotected. We took a summer break, but now we're back. I'm your host, Ethan Lehman, and I'm here with my co-host, Koji Somalde.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the show.
Koji, you ready for that intro?
Let's cue it up.
Just toss them overboard when you're sitting having lunch, or you know, just anything like that.
The classic.
We actually were joking about setting up an OnlyFins account.
Here's to us all swimming through the shit and making more sense of it.
Wild and unprotected, planet Earth, we can't neglect it. Ah, nature's sexy, we need these places, so please respect it.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Wild and Unprotected. Today's episode, we have a very special guest by the name of Shelby Thomas. She is the founder and CEO of Ocean Rescue Alliance International. So Shelby, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. Sweet. And today, I think one thing we need to do before we get started is, Shelby, let's just tell the audience a little bit about yourself and what space you're in.
Awesome. So a little bit about me. I'm a Florida born native. I grew up Daytona Beach area, Ponce Inlet, Port Orange. My family's still there. I now live in Tampa, Florida, on the west coast of Florida, but I still do a lot of work in Southeast Florida from Fort Lauderdale all the way down to the Keys. My scientific background, I'm a marine biologist, currently finishing my PhD with the University of Florida. I've had a diverse background, initially starting out in biomedical research and then shifting gears to doing restoration of corals and other marine species as well, such as seagrass, scallops, oysters, mangroves. Really, I found a passion within coral restoration, which prompted me to start a nonprofit back in 2018. And I've been simultaneously running my nonprofit and finishing my PhD program. So I'm fortunately almost done with the PhD. I'm planning to graduate this coming spring and continue working with my nonprofit. So it's been pretty blessed. Love living in Florida and love marine life and serving the ocean.
That's awesome. Before we go too deep, I'm going to have to give you a little shit about going to the University of Florida. I started my college career as a Knoll. So we're on opposite sides of that. It's go Knolls all the way over here.
Go Gators.
Oh, it burns. It burns. But definitely we'll support, you know, anyone who comes out of the state and is successful, especially in marine biology. Funny thing is, that's actually what I started in, was marine biology before moving into business. So we already have some similarities there, just in very different colors. That blue and orange.
Oof. Quite literally.
But congrats on, you know, again, graduating in the spring. That's awesome. And I'm sure it's going to help you in the future and with your nonprofit. So let's dive into that a little bit. Tell us about your nonprofit.
Yeah, so I started the Ocean Rescue Alliance back in 2019. Really in 2018, I got involved with another nonprofit called the 1,000 Mermaids Project. And so I'll talk on the front end of what got me intrigued into starting my own organization first. And really my journey's been pretty diverse, and I never would have expected I'd be where I'm at today, but very fortunate to be. Again, I started college really focused on biomedical research, so I always had an interest in the ocean. So I actually used ocean organisms to look for secondary metabolites for potential cancer cures. Really got into the science space and just the potential of what marine organisms we can use for medical purposes, which is immense. And many people don't realize actually some of our biggest medical advancements today have come from the ocean. Like anytime anyone's ever had an IV, that's actually been from utilizing horseshoe crab blood, which is about $14,000 a liter. But that's a little fun fact in there that a lot of people don't know.
That's expensive ass blood.
That is. And, you know, there's things such as the cone snail, which is about an inch long, but it has 1,000 times the potency of Taxol, which is what we use to treat breast cancer and colon cancer. So just the potential of marine organisms is immense for helping humanity. And really throughout my journey, I realized I didn't like being in the lab all the time, but I got to actually start teaching scuba diving at UF and volunteered for a stony tissue loss disease monitoring program where we were helping monitor the corals that were dying here in Florida. And so that really shifted my career. I actually had a dive that was instrumental in doing that. I saw a 6 foot by 4 feet cavernosa colony, massive coral that's been alive for hundreds of years, die in just 3 days. And that had a huge impact on me because it's almost like leprosy. The tissue is just receding and we couldn't do anything about it. And that really brought awareness in the fact that this is happening in waters right off of multi-million dollar homes, thriving communities and cities, and really no one's talking about this. And this problem's continuing to expand all around the world. And so that really shifted my career to do restoration. And so for my master's, I did marine ecology, focused on a variety of marine species restoration. My PhD, I really refined that and have worked with doing probiotics for corals, seagrass and scallop restoration. So I've had a really diverse applied background. And through that journey, I really have noticed, one, some of the limitations within the scientific space. A lot of academic institutions or nonprofits have limited funds for restoration. So often they're competing for the same funds, often grants, or they're even funded from mitigation or remediation funding. And so I really saw the need to develop more sustainable business models to support scaling restoration work. And also in the process, a lot of marine restoration is still done in a sense of more primitively, not at an industrial scale, right? We can plant thousands of trees with technology on land, but we're still individually outplanting corals one by one with cements and epoxies and even nailing and zip tying them down to reefs. And as you can imagine, that's not the most scaled way that we could approach to doing restoration to what we need to. And so that really piqued my interest into how can we close gaps within restoration? How can we work more collaboratively and really eliminate gaps between internal politics for nonprofits and build more sustainable solutions in ways that can be supported by business? And that's what prompted me really to start Ocean Rescue Alliance to do that. Starting the nonprofit really initially came from getting engaged with an artificial reef eco art project. There was an artist that approached me with the 1,000 Mermaids project that they were sculpting people as mermaids to bring awareness to marine conservation. And they wanted to know if they could put corals on the sculptures. And they had been denied by many scientists as that's really not permittable in the state of Florida, but it really piqued my interest. And I thought further, I'm like, well, if we design reefs to mimic natural reef geology, then we could potentially put corals on them. And we could use art as a way to fund restoration and bring awareness. And so I quickly fell in love with using art as a tool to connect people and to fund direct restoration. And so coming into Ocean Rescue Alliance, really we're able to expand art initiatives at a deeper level that can connect with community and culture, but still designing different marine infrastructure to really scale restoration. So that's our primary intention, is to design structures that scale marine restoration, but also create habitat in the process and connecting communities together through art. And so we've been at it for now about 4 or 5 years. We've gotten over 5 artificial reefs now in the ocean. We've worked on outplanting over 30,000 corals. We have about 80 sculptures total as we're expanding and now starting to expand internationally. So it's been quite the journey and definitely a lot of hurdles along the way that we can dive into a bit further. But incredibly blessed to be where I'm at now. And you know, I just really love being able to work with a dynamic group of people and institutions. We work with other nonprofits, academic institutions, private entities, and even corporate agencies now. So it's been great just to see some of the support to where we've gotten now has been really through proper collaboration.
That's amazing. You hit on scalable business models and how being sustainable in a nonprofit, especially, you know, when there's not a lot of funds to go around, you know, kind of creates almost internal strife. Can you talk about the sustainable business model that you've built with Ocean Rescue Alliance and the business models that you see kind of surrounding you in that space and what they could do to change?
Yeah, absolutely. So really in the nonprofit coral restoration space, typically that's really restrained to grants or different federal funding. Often you don't see a direct business model supporting really a majority of environmental work, not just the marine environment, but also terrestrial. And so what we've done is through using art, it's enabling a different type of approach towards municipalities like cities and counties, hotels, or even individuals that we can approach and do custom briefs that now create an ecotourism dive site that actually have an ROI, a return on investment to that direct area from creating a project. So even if they might not have had the intentions to do a coral restoration or create a marine habitat reef, they're now getting the opportunity to do so while having a unique dive destination. So the art itself is one of our primary business models where we can approach a variety of different agencies and using that art as the tool as the attraction. But in addition, we've been doing celebratory and memorial reefs, and that's a way to really create an individual impact perspective. So anyone can adopt a coral from $20 to $50 that they actually sponsor a coral outplant that they can come dive and they get a certificate to you can create your own individual reef to celebrate an anniversary or someone who's passed away. And that itself is also a very sustainable way to scale restoration in terms of our habitat structures, where now we can create reefs in a variety of different areas. And then other sides are also the education and running programming at those sites once they're existing. And that's really exciting because we actually get to help support local economic growth. And that really feeds back into the whole system. So that's really our primary drivers of revenue. We can still apply for grants, but you know, we've also been prioritizing different corporate sponsors and building structures themselves. So being able to actually manufacture artificial reefs and different restoration applications itself is also a revenue driver.
Yeah, I feel like that's something that never gets spoken about when it comes to nonprofits or 501c3s in general is the revenue model. Like you still can drive revenue in a way that's positive for the work that you're doing, especially, you know, when it comes to reef artwork is I would have never guessed that. So that's pretty cool. Can you expand on the manufacturing process? I'm curious as to how you can manufacture a reef.
Yeah. So we work with several contractors and we're actually in the process of I'm in the process of starting a for-profit arm where we'll be able to manufacture more at scale. And that's just kind of held differently between a nonprofit. But right now, what we do is contract out. Our primary reef builder is Reef Cells out of Boynton Beach, Florida. And he's had over about 35 years of experience with building artificial reefs. And so how that process works is, especially on the art side, we're actually able to 3D scan any image, person, or logo and make them into a reef. And so we take that 3D scan that's actually 3D printed into a mold that we then cast with concrete. And the same thing for building the biological reefs. We actually have a mold that we'll then cast with the concrete. And all of our materials are eco-friendly. So we use a pH neutral, environmentally friendly concrete mix. We're also exploring some other innovative mixes as well that reduces the carbon footprint of concrete itself. So we're really looking at sustainability as a whole from the manufacturing process, the materials, and even with how we transport and deploy our artificial reefs. So, but from through and through, we build them at the facility, and then we're able to truck them and bring them out to a barge and sink them into the ocean.
That sounds like you've got a lot done in the past 5 years.
That's so badass.
Ocean Rescue Alliance. Yeah, that's really awesome. Kudos to you, Shelby. Before we go like very deep into Ocean Rescue Alliance, I know you've touched base on a lot of really good things. And Ethan, those are great questions you asked. Let's reel it back a little bit, you know, for the general audience out there that's like, what is she talking about? I kind of want to connect the audience to Shelby and how you really got started, like even before, you know, realizing that these big reefs are dying right in front of our eyes. When did this start for you? Like as a child, were you just intrigued by the water? Were you always a mermaid in your young life? Or did this happen as you were more educated throughout the school system?
Yeah, I'd say I grew up definitely a water baby, you know, diving, grew up surfing and just exploring the water, really started diving more so in high school and recreationally. And then knew that I wanted to do something with a marine focus, but also was interested in medicine. And I think what's always intrigued me about the ocean is also just this inherent peacefulness that comes with it, but also the mystery. There's such a vast ocean, our planet's a majority of water, and there's so much to be discovered. So just the mystery of itself has always intrigued me because we know so little about our own oceans. We know more about space than the ocean. And so just the percentage explored compared to what we could be doing was always very intriguing for me. And so I tried to kind of combine those two interests, starting undergrad in microbiology and marine science, and then just really developed a love for doing very tangible, impactful work. But I definitely would say it's been fostered since I was a kid. No one in my family is a marine biologist. And I think what's really nice now, you know, I hear this story a lot. People are like, I used to want to be a marine biologist, but, you know, and there used to be this very restrictive view of what a marine biologist is. And sometimes you occasionally get people like, oh, so do you train dolphins or do you, like, you know, research sharks?
Do you work at SeaWorld?
Yeah, or sea turtles or, you know, those main questions. Or some people say, you know, I wanted to be a marine biologist, but they don't make enough money. And I think that the beautiful thing about our generation now and just where we're at in terms of like the blue economy is really starting to boom. There's so many options in the marine space that are profitable. You can make a good living wage and making an impact. And so really that expansion in my mind started a little bit as I was going into college. So you could have a variety of different things you were looking to do, you know, and especially in the restoration space. I mean, we're now seeing, you know, renewable energy, especially from the ocean, become more of an interest, which is great to hear. I mean, the ocean's one of our biggest and most consistent resources. And with all the technology we have, we're able to get a sample from Mars. We should be making clean, efficient energy out of our oceans that are a 24/7 consistent resource. So I think really just the opportunities are endless. And that's really what's intrigued me all along with working within the ocean and marine life. And just the awareness factor, right? We've been on a steady decline of not just coral reefs, but all kinds of marine species that we don't even know that we're jeopardizing. So I quickly really got very passionate about not only bringing awareness, but actually trying to do work that has an immediate impact that you can tangibly see. It's really fulfilling. And I'm a huge advocate of pursuing what you love and what you're passionate about. So I try to always like encourage people to do that. And despite what everybody thinks, you know, is the money maker, or, you know, at the end of the day, it's really finding something that truly makes you happy. And so that's really what I've found through my journey. And I think it's even better. Like I'm blessed. Even the other day after we deployed the reef, I got to dive it the next day. I'm like, this isn't work. You know, it's mm-hmm. really nice. So I'm fortunate to have found my path. It wasn't always as focused, but, you know, I just trust the process. I've always done that.
Yeah. That's amazing. You know, I grew up being told, you know, if you do what you love, you never work a day in your life. And it seems to ring pretty true in this situation.
Absolutely.
Before we get too far into this week's episode, I wanted to give a quick shout out to our sponsor. Our sponsor this week is you, our listeners. How? Well, now that we're a nonprofit, the donations that we receive go directly towards funding our shows. Want to help or need more information? Visit wildscapeproduction.com/donate to support the show. We're so thankful for the support. You make the show exactly what it is.
I would say we get to be pretty lucky too over here, though.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. We're well on our way. You know, we're on that train of trusting the process. It takes years and villages to create something as impactful as you've done, and as well as our previous guests on the show. You know, it's years and years and years of working in the trenches and believing that what you're doing is actually impactful and creating change, and also being a catalyst to do so. So it's just one of those things, you know, like you put your time, energy, and your money where your mouth is, and it all pays off, especially if you can, you know, one day work to do, you know, drop the reefs in the water, and then the next day you're down there diving them. Like that's pretty incredible. And for, you know, the audience out there that's questioning if they take that marine biology route or they take that scientist route, you know, there's a lot of avenues that you can go when it comes to conservation and restoration and many different assets or avenues. But kind of what are your two cents on, you know, someone coming from a college background and now being a PhD candidate, what would you give advice to, you know, that 16-17 year old right now that's like, I want to do it, but I don't know if I can? There's that like but side of it. Can you speak on that?
Yeah. I mean, I'm always an advocate of you might as well try, right? you miss that. That's another quote, right? You miss 100% of the shots you don't take. And that's very true with anything that you try. I think I have always been very driven and tried a lot of things. I even have done odds and ends jobs from working as like a plant geneticist and biologist, which I never was going to go into plants, but learned very
tangible.
Oh
yeah, you know, just because that's an odds and ends job.
Well, it's definitely not what I'm doing now. And it all had transferable skills. I mean, I used to train horses growing up, and actually I attribute horses as to just the discipline and drive that I have today as that being my groundwork for that. And so everything that's kind of led me to where I'm at, everything had value. And I truly see value in all the people and relationships that I build, but also the experiences that I have and jobs that I've had that might not have been as immediately applicable. And so, you know, my recommendation would be for first of all, to try it out. You can always go volunteer, work with other groups to what you might be, and you might not be interested in that specific avenue, but it's also do what you can. You know, I'm an advocate of even, you don't have to be a marine biologist to help the ocean or help us in our cause. You can come from business or social media marketing or digital design and still have a huge impact on our industry. So you can creatively contribute to any cause that you really care about with your current skill set. And it's just finding a way to apply it. And I always say that, I mean, even from, for example, the videography, photography side, you know, those literally capturing some of these moments and even degradation of the environment, but also restoration can have such a visual impact for communicating. And so I really like to advocate for people to find what your path and passion is. And you can always help other sectors of work. Just through using your skills. So it's not as black and white as people think it is. And I think we're just in a place, again, as I mentioned with the blue economy, where there's so much opportunity, not only as a marine biologist or oceanographer, to explore different job opportunities. And they're immense. They're growing.
Wow. Yeah, I love that you said that, you know, the videography and photography section of it, because that's my business. I own a production company. And then Ethan and I started this production company, which is nonprofit, and, you know, kind of taking that skill set and bringing it into the awareness and the cause that we want to fight for is so important, because there's not many nonprofit media companies out there that are working alongside, other, you know, organizations like yourself. And it's tricky to kind of gain trust in that realm, coming from, you know, a background of like, oh, everything's sales and marketing, everything is selling yourself and your services and finding a way to get in the right room, you know. But then when you walk into this room and you're like, hey, I'm down here rolling up my sleeves with you, trying to do the same thing. And it kind of opens up that door creatively for that rapport to be built. And I think it's super important for the audience to know that, you know, it's not black and white, like you just said. It's not a place that you have to have these credentials. If you have a skill set and you're passionate about it, I think it could unfold for anyone that's willing to do so. But that's incredible. I digress. I want to kind of fast forward into like today, like right now. You just spoke with us before we hit record about your most recent project off of Hollywood, Florida. Can you kind of speak on what that looks like day in and day out? Like, Shelby has her thing, she has her team. What is every single day look like for that project?
Yeah, so it's always a little different per project. This one specifically, we worked with the city of Hollywood Beach to deploy a reef right off the coast there. And they were actually one of the first cities to actually fund a full artificial reef build out, which is incredible. They really recognize the value and also impact to the marine environment that it has. So they were really one of our proud partners that have helped make this project possible. And what we have done is actually created 25 artificial reef structures. 5 of those are sculptures. The remaining 20 are all dedicated to coral nursery bases and marine habitat. So habitat for fish that we're able to put down. We're actually aiming to do multiple installations through the next several years with the city of Hollywood. The site that we have right now that we put out to about 50 feet of depth, about a mile offshore. So it's a dive site. Some people can free dive it if they're experienced, but we're really looking forward to further developing sites that are near shore. So the next few sites we're doing with the city of Hollywood will actually be snorkelable. And we're really excited about that because it really increases the accessibility to the public. So you don't have to have a dive certification. You don't have to go out on a boat. You can actually access it from the beach. So that's coming soon in 2024. But once those projects are in the water, in terms of the day-to-day, that's obviously a resource that people can come and use. We already have dive shops that are going and diving these sites and bringing guests and residents and tourists. But it also creates marine habitat. And our goals moving forward is to actually outplant coral here. We're looking to outplant coral from a relocation project. So we're working through the permits right now to access that for that Hollywood site, but then also running programs like citizen science and education. So it really becomes a resource. We aim for anyone to use the site. So other academic institutions that want to conduct research, we've really strongly partnered with the University of Miami and Nova Southeastern that have done research at our other sites with us in West Palm and throughout Miami and the Keys. But now this site's another one to add, actually right in NSU's backyard. So we're excited to continue collaboration with those academic institutions at that site. But again, just expanding it. We're not out there daily. We minimum will monitor every site quarterly. So every 3 months we go out and we'll actually do surveys looking at coral growth, benthic recruitment, fish recruitment, and see how the structures are doing. We don't just build it and leave it. We really want this to be a regenerative resource for the community, but also for marine life itself.
That's amazing. And now that you say those things, you start to paint the picture of the ROI too, from the business perspective of how a city can come in, they can invest in, you know, your organization and invest in their wildlife, you know, economy essentially to drive tourism. And to me, that's a no-brainer. You know, you could connect that with several, you know, large cities with booming tourism industries across, you know, the entire nation. And like you said, scale internationally. And out of a sudden, you have a sustainable business model, which not many organizations, you know, in this industry do. That's absolutely phenomenal.
Thanks. And I the thing I love about the art side of things is because you're now creating, you can create a customizability to a specific area and demographic. And so a project we're really excited about is we're building a Mayan reef in Mexico. And we're actually working with a Mayan native community. And we're doing a serpent deity called the Kluklan. And that community decided which deity we were going to be doing. And so now we really get this awesome opportunity to one, create a marine site that helps the environment, can help with coral restoration as a nursery, but more impactfully connects deep community and culture. And it brings awareness to Mayan culture in a different light to tourists that visit. And we actually got three hotels that'll sponsor that construction together. And so we really want to do that representatively here throughout Florida. We right now have the Thousand Mermaids Eco Art Project, which has been pretty catchy. We've been building more sites throughout Florida, but we really desire and encourage new partners to explore more impactful art pathways as a way to connect to that community. We can even open up a poll to see what the community wants, right, as a voice to connect them back to this resource, because that's ultimately what we try to do with the art. And it's a way for, let's say, you know, we see all these hotels and coastal developers, often they're not contributing to restoration, but they're exploiting all of these marine resources daily for having that resort right on the beach. And it's
and
really
runoff.
This.
And right? They have a mass amount of runoff that's going directly into the water.
Yeah. And at least here in the States, that, you know, impact in terms of that all these hotels are making, they don't charge, you know, yes, they're taxed, but really taxpayers pay for some of the restoration and maintenance of marine resources or like doing beach nourishment. And so we really want to create this responsibility and accountability that can engage these hotels and give them an incentive to be part of the solution. And so that's really what giving art to them does, because they can make a custom site that's specific to them. But now it creates this corporate responsibility that if you're going to go stay at a hotel in South Florida, are you going to stay at one that has a snorkel site right off the beach? Mm. Or, you know, now each hotel might want to get a snorkel site. And inadvertently, they're now contributing to creating a restoration site. We're going to be outplanting corals there, regardless of if they pay for that, once that resource is there. And so that's kind of how we've kind of turned the tables in a sense to engage more of the audiences that aren't engaged with the ocean, but still utilize them daily. So that's kind of our hope, is to grow these sites across coastlines around the world, not just here in Florida with corals, but we can also do oyster and mangrove restoration. And just creating habitat itself, or creating breakwaters that protect against coastal erosion. So there's a lot of different sectors, but that's really the intention with the art, is to create that responsibility.
That's awesome. And wow. One thing I thought about too, while, you know, you were going through the hotel explanation, was this responsibility doesn't become another line item on a hotel guest's bill. You know, there's a bed tax and there's several other taxes that hotel guests incur when they stay there. But instead of, you know, adding another tax item that could be pushed towards local government that could fund, you know, these restoration initiatives, now if they pay for it themselves, now they can market and advertise it as another way for them to draw guests to their hotels. I mean, I'm sure the base rate, you know, to stay a night there will go up to cover that cost, but it's way more incentivizing, I think, for both hotels and guests to have it done that way than as a line item on a bill. That's really cool.
Thanks. Yeah. And, you know, I think what's interesting too, between obviously other countries have different mechanisms for this. And so a lot of hotels internationally actually have the incentive to protect their property because they have to pay for it. So if you haven't heard of beach nourishment, it's where they dredge sand and they dump it on shore to maintain the coastline. This is done at large all over the world. And ultimately, in my view, it's a Band-Aid. It's a quick fix to the long-term problem. That sand goes right back out with every wave and storm, and often is taken from places where it's destroying the environment, or they're taking sand from other areas that's actually mixing different microbiomes and smothering existing resources. So ultimately, it's just this thing that we're doing as a quick fix. And so one of the solutions that we provide are these breakwaters that, like a natural reef, you can place them and they actually reduce and dissipate wave energy while creating habitat and enabling restoration. And so places you'll see, for example, throughout the Caribbean, and especially in areas that have a higher inherent risk from storms, they're now really prioritizing coastal protection and resiliency. But often they don't have a government that can pay to put out these structures and protection. And so some of these hotels are more incentivized to protect those resources. And at least here in the States, that's mostly taxpayer dollars. So the art kind of gives another pathway to help push this accountability, like we were just discussing, but also take it a different switch. You know, I wish we actually did have some kind of coastal resilience or environmental tax that coastal developers had to pay. Because right now, as it sits, you know, just the taxpayers pay for any environmental remediation that happens in the U.S.
This is a great time to kind of shift into story time. This is the fun part. Actually, I've been having fun. I'm sure you have too. Yeah. So one thing we like to do is kind of like figuratively pass the mic and you know allow you to kind of speak on some stories, whether it be, you know, a field mission, whether it be a restoration project, whether it be a fundraiser, or, you know, whatever the case may be. What are some crazy stories, you know, that you've kind of overcome in the past since starting Ocean Rescue Alliance?
Yeah, I'll walk through a few. I'll start with one that's frustration. Then I'll go to something like happy success, and then like a little funny one on the side.
Okay.
I'll start with the more kind of like weighted one. I think, you know, it's a double-edged sword in terms of like progress and restoration in the environmental space in the States, just in terms of from regulatory constraints. There's lots of, for good reasons, restrictions on some, you know, pushing innovation or trying out new designs or outplanting and working with different species. We were fortunate, and it actually took about 3 years to get a special activities license to explore outplanting endangered species of corals on our artificial structures for research. We're still pushing that to be a scaled restoration initiative, but where I can give that in perspective is a lot of people doing restoration, at least in our space of corals, are focusing on species that are endangered here in Florida. We could very well, so really not as many organizations are doing restoration with species that are not endangered. Therefore, there's also areas like expanding up to West Palm and the northern part of the reef tract that we're not able to do restoration because of beach nourishment and all of these other ongoing processes. So it becomes this kind of counter where we're not able to do restoration because these services are happening, but we need to do restoration to help safeguard these species. And it's this almost political and regulatory back and forth that's very prohibitive. in this space. And we're starting to see this evolve a little bit. I mean, we were fortunate to be one of the first to obtain a permit with the University of Miami and Coral Restoration Foundation to outplant small artificial structures on natural reefs in the Keys. And that's helped us scale outplanting thousands of corals at a time. So that was one of our really kind of success pushes. Another unique one that was really a turn for us, we were working with the city of Dania Beach to do their first reef before the city of Hollywood. And we got all the way up till a month pre-deployment. And we were working with Broward County to deploy this reef in a site that they already had an open permit for, which sometimes can take 2 to 3 years to get a permit. So we're really excited. We were fortunate to get a Good Morning America episode for World's Oceans Day 30 days prior. The Navy saw it and decided to shut down the site completely because the site we were deploying in, this was a huge turn of events because we were so excited, did so many community events, had the reef built, was about to go out in a month, got a bunch of press, and then they're like, nope, you're not doing this. The Navy said no. And the reason.
Did they give you a reason?
Yes, there's a reason. So that site off of Dania Beach is actually a naval research area where they actually detect like international warfare, and they have probes that are hundreds of thousands of dollars under the sand that pick up different acoustics. So they don't want anyone anchoring. They don't want ecotourism there. Totally understand. And I tried everything that I could to like, we'll take the art structures, we'll go deploy them somewhere else, we'll just put the restoration structures. They're like, it's already made too much like news that we got to say no.
My goodness. I understand both sides, and that sucks so
me
bad.
Me too. So what we ended up doing was actually like flipping the contract, and City of Hollywood did it, and we still got that reef deployed, which is awesome. But that was just a crazy ride of, you know, all of these agencies, because it's a lot of work for each of our reefs. We almost have to coordinate between 6 to 7 agencies to make this happen. So there's a lot of steps in the process, and it's a completely joint effort. I mean, we're fortunate to even get where we are. Our first deployment in Palm Beach County. Palm Beach actually donated the first barge for us to deploy, which is about $45,000 a day, just because they believed in our cause. They wanted to put the structures out. So we really, our reef builder, donated all the materials and construction time for our first several artificial reefs. So we wouldn't have been able to expense that otherwise. You know, hundreds of thousands of dollars have come together through community support, through agency support, and believing in our mission. So I'm incredibly thankful to be where we are now. But you know, that one project was quite the little flip, but the great thing is we still got that reef deployed right next door. It's still in the ocean doing good work. So that was a kind of crazy, frustration story of just, you know, going from regulation restriction to even just some, you know, municipality agency, differences. And you'd be surprised of, you know, I did not realize I was somewhat getting into politics. You're doing environmental work, but some cities and counties have different relationships between each other, and that's dynamically different as you move across Florida and the U.S. So that's been a learning process of where, you know, we can really gauge of how we're approaching doing reef projects depending on the priorities of that area. Success story. I mean, definitely with getting some of the first permit to do some of our research and work has been amazing. We've been really making strides to doing breakwaters for sustainable coastal resilience work. You know, now a fun story, when we finally got the City of Hollywood reef out, the mayor, Josh Levy, has been a huge advocate for the project. He's also a diver. And so we went out on the first dive on the reef with him. And one funny thing is I don't know if you guys are divers, but trigger and damselfish like to be a little protective of their space. And so we have an underwater mermaid selfie tail, and Josh went to go take a picture as Mayor Merman. And as soon as this fish was following him the whole dive, as soon as he put his hand on the tail, the fish came and bit his hand. And we got the moment. We have the exact moment on photo, and it looks like a little kiss on his finger. So I'll send it to you guys.
Can we put that on the show? Yes, that would be so good.
I will send it to you. And the funny thing is
we'll tag him too on social media.
Yeah, we had also a news agent Louis Aguirre, who worked for News Channel 10 in Miami, who is also out with us. And so we came back up, and on the interview, Josh was like, well, the fish just told me that he's the mayor of the reef now. And so it's just really funny. And full circle, that was like first mayor that's ever dove with us. But it's been really phenomenal working at the City of Hollywood, because they're really invested. They see the value in marine resources. And so we really hope to model that across other counties in Florida, because really as a state in Florida, we're highly dependent on all of our environmental resources as a draw for people to live, do well economically here in Florida, but also for tourism. So it's really nice to work with people and partners that appreciate and recognize that value. And so we're excited to expand, but those are a few fun stories from projects.
That's a good one. And I think you hit on something almost inadvertently, kind of the politics of it. Anytime you're in conservation, I feel like you're walking a political tightrope. And I'm out on the West Coast now, and a lot of what I hear is almost, you know, stories about Florida people. Florida people don't care about the environment. People learn where you're from, and especially something I think is polarizing is Florida. You know, people immediately have a reaction, and they ask if you've eaten bath salts or anything of that nature, or did COVID really exist in Florida? Like, I got asked that a million times. Yeah. And I was like, I'm out here on the West Coast with you in quarantine. How the hell am I supposed to know? I feel like Florida's gotten a really, really bad rap about, mm-hmm. you know, their political organizations not really caring for things like that. And I don't think I can stress enough that it's the exact opposite. Florida is so dependent on ecotourism. It's not all Mickey Mouse and Universal. Florida is more dependent on ecotourism than any of those factors, and they have to back organizations such as yourself in order to thrive and continue to push state budgets forward, you know, state agendas forward. And it's really good that you're highlighting a city like Hollywood that really shows that, because that's the truth of what a lot of Florida is. Where Koji and I come from, that's all it is ecotourism, and the beaches are what I would say 75% of the county budget goes towards is, you know, ecotourism and restoration of what makes the state so beautiful. And in turn, that helps conservation efforts. Now, are there a few bad eggs? And maybe bad eggs isn't, you know, the right thing to call them. I think that are there people with different views is probably the best way to put it. Yes, 100%. I even think you can look towards, you know, the governor of the state right now, and some of the bills that he's vetoed even recently, which impact another organization that we've recently worked with Tampa Bay Waterkeeper. So yeah, there are a few people who have views that are different, but as a majority, and I would say, you know, as almost a whole, the state really does care about the environment, especially surrounding it, because essentially the state would die without it. I mean, you would have the old people that live in the retirement areas of Florida, and that would be it. Mm-hmm. Like, there would be no one else there. I think a lot of the young people in our generation moved to Florida to be a part of, you know, the blue boom, kind of like you're talking about, which I personally think is almost directly tied to social media and the boom of social media. Because there's content like this, like what we're trying to make, there's content that other organizations that are trying to make that really put the conservation space directly in front of you. And a lot of that comes from Florida, strangely enough. And spending a lot of time on the West Coast, especially out in California, the water is too damn cold even to do a lot of this stuff. So most of what you see comes from Florida, strangely enough. So it's really cool that you hit on that, and thank you for that. Because as a Florida native living on the West Coast now, it's really cool to kind of see, you know, some rebuttal to a lot of the arguments that I get.
Yeah, and kind of quick comment to that, and I'll go through from the politics side and people's view on Florida to even social media impacts in a second. But, you know, one of the funny things, just quick note to the viewpoint of like Florida as being crazy and everyone in Florida is crazy and everything going on in Florida is crazy. A lot of that's actually attributed to because we have we don't have a law that prohibits arrest records. There's a lot of states that seal that. So those crazy things that you see happen, Florida publishes it. So people see
Florida
it.
Man.
Yep. Well, everyone knows about, look up Florida man and your birthday. It's interesting. But that's one of the reasons why we have some of this very like public facing, like Florida's crazy. But I mean, from the political side, I think everywhere, right, has some bad eggs. Everyone has separate intentions and sometimes they're conflicting, I think, within every state. And every state has conservation and environmental needs. You know, the thing I think we try to do is try to approach things from different perspectives. And that's where art comes into play. And working with people that might have different really intentions and perspectives than us, but try to shift it, you know, in very intentional ways, like recognizing like, okay, they don't really see value or wouldn't fund restoration otherwise. What's another pathway that they would care about and could maybe connect them to it? And so I think like people can do that in any space and should always try to. And, you know, one of the problems that I inherently see now, you know, more than ever, and this is what I stress is I think being one of the biggest problems of today is the missing connection between people and nature. I mean, we have always looked at nature from an exploitation perspective rather than a synergistic perspective. And if we start changing our mindset of, you know, through serving nature, we also sustain and serve ourselves. You know, we need that. Like we have that gap of that inherent nature to take accountability and responsibility for environment. And sometimes that's depending on your environment, right? I mean, even different parts of Florida, different parts of the states in the US, the how you grew up and that political environment or that environment itself a lot often dictates how you respond to the natural environment. If people pollute or throw away their trash, right? There's other areas that people are more conservative, and it's how do you approach that shifting that? It's really difficult. Like that's a difficult thing to do. And ultimately, like
we're trying to tackle.
Yeah, it's hard. And that's also why like I love psychology, and that's why I fell in love with art too, is it's another unique way to connect with people that have nothing to do with the ocean and find a different pathway to try to connect them. Same thing with the memorial reefs, right? It's if you live in the middle of Montana and have never seen the ocean before, but your grandmother has a reef in the ocean now, you might be a little more cognizant on a daily basis of your impact to the environment because now you feel personally connected. And that's really our ultimate. Don't kill grandma. Gotta, you know, and it's a different relationship. I think it creates a lot of beauty, even from the memorial perspective. Instead of you know, going to a tombstone, you can dive into a world full of life, knowing that it's sustaining generations of marine life. So, you know, our hope is really at the deeper level to connect people personally back to the ocean. And, you know, moving to the social media side, I think, you know, there's beauty and chaos in it, right? In terms of like how things are displayed to people. And the thing that I love about right photography, videography, people can be very intentional. Like there's sometimes, like I'm sure you guys know about like the whole plastic straw ban because of the one photo with the sea turtle and the straw in its nose. I mean, if we could be intentional to literally spark bans over photos and videos, imagine what we can do if we were very intentional with how we set like displaying stuff like that. You know, there's certain things like that. That's one example that have had an impact, especially here in Florida. You know, we're making little strides. I'd say just banning, you know, single-use plastic of straws isn't cutting it. I mean, it's something, but, you know, I really like to empower people to, again, like use their own skills to make an impact. And that's a great example of how photographers and videographers can really make impactful messaging that could appeal to different audiences, right, to bring awareness. So that's something like I'm really cognizant of. And I wouldn't say I always have that fully creative lens, but I love working with people that see kind of creatively ways to make an impact through what they do.
We wouldn't know nothing about that. We wouldn't know anything about creativity.
No. A little bit. I love working with creative people. So I was like, yes, I'll talk with you guys.
Well, we'll definitely further that conversation because there's a within our business structure and our model of where we're trying to go with Wildscape Productions. It's the podcast is the top of the funnel for us. It allows us to be able to open up these conversations, get to know these organizations, and pretty much like, you know, look back in a year or 2 years and say, look at all these people that we've had amazing conversations with. Let's dive in a little bit further. Let's do a longer form documentary. Let's dive into the people behind this organization. Let's tell their stories. Let's help them tell their stories in a creative way that helps them connect to multiple different audiences or just one audience for that matter. So there's definitely room for more conversation around that. But I think this is a great way to kind of segue into towards the end of the show. So Shelby, what does the future look like for Ocean Rescue Alliance?
Yeah, so I mean, long-term, we really want to expand not only the marine species that we work with for restoration, but also the different applications of structures that we do. Right now, we're exploring even seawall enhancements, of course, the breakwaters, but also other areas around the world. So, you know, on a personal level, I really desire to approach and providing these resources to developing nations that couldn't afford it. So we're aiming to really try to put these in more of the higher priority areas that are impacted from climate change, like the Caribbean and a lot of the more equator located countries that are going to be severely impacted with storms increasing. I mean, with you being in Florida, Koji, I'm sure you know our hurricane seasons often are no joke, and they're just continuously increasing. We're actually in an El Nino year right now, which means we're going to have even more severe and recurring storms that are intensifying. So it's a very real perspective of, you know, what we're needing to focus our priorities on. So we're looking to grow our sites and scope. I'd say like our next project future that's closest to you guys. We're actually looking at St. Peter Clearwater on pushing an initiative called the Champa Bay Reef. So we've already talked with the Rays and the, we've already talked with the Rays and the Lightning, which we have an LOI from, and we're going to be talking with the Bucks. We're also engaging partners like Tampa Bay Estuary Program, Tampa Bay Watch, as well as some other local nonprofits that do restoration. Our goal is to do restoration of oysters and mangroves in living shorelines with sea and shoreline throughout Tampa Bay itself and Tampa Bay proper, but also St. Pete and Clearwater. And then the artistic spin for the dive site will be Champa Bay. So we're planning to engage all three sports teams and do the trophies from the 2020 wins. Bucks won the Super Bowl. Lightning won the Stanley Cup 2 years in a row. Rays went to the World Series, got the All-American trophy. So we want to do all three trophies and potentially a few players from each team and make that a Champa Bay dive site. And then on top of that, do a very large restoration project that'll hit different areas of the bay, St. Pete, Clearwater. We want to really combine all of these areas, especially, Koji, as you know, our water quality hasn't been the best. We've had increased red tide, increased storms, a lot of different environmental issues, seagrass die off. So we're really wanting to address water quality as a whole, but also sustainable restoration. So really excited about that project. That's really next up. Perhaps we could engage you guys too with that to some different points too. So I'm really excited about that. We've never worked with sports teams. So I think it also gives another different perspective where now I forget the statistic exactly, but it's like 70% of people watch sports versus listen to science and watch, you know, science media. So engaging that audience and getting that audience to care and just see a different lens of restoration through having a fun sports reef, I think will have an immense impact on the community. So that's really our next goal in terms of art direction to make impact. But again, I'm always open to any idea. I love talking to anyone that, you know, wants to explore new project initiatives. So we're always open to contact for that. And I guess I can lead into the contact.
That's perfect. Who needs podcast hosts?
I know, right? If anyone wants to reach out to us, I mean, my email is just shelby@oceanrescuealliance.org. Our website's oceanrescuealliance.org itself. So you can always feel free to reach out there. Also, all of our project coordinates are listed there. So if you ever want to dive our site, see what we're up to, can sign up for our newsletter, find out about events and ways to volunteer. But welcome any outreach. Welcome to reach out anytime.
And don't forget to donate.
Yeah, donations help. And we're also on social media, Ocean Rescue Alliance, on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, you know, whole.
You're going to do Threads?
Nine. We're not on Threads.
That just launched, and I spent a stupid amount of time yesterday navigating Threads and getting us launched on Threads. So hop on Threads.
Yeah, there's a lot of platforms now, but we're on the primaries.
So. Yeah, the big ones.
Yeah, but our newsletter is always incredible. Good to follow what we're doing. We're not spammy. We really like once a month send out a little overview of what's going on.
Yeah, and your website looks really good. You guys keep it updated. It looks good and professional. So there's a lot of information on there too. So for the audience out there that's listening to this, go check out Shelby. Shelby Thomas at Ocean Rescue Alliance. I'm sure you'll see her diving off a boat somewhere off the southern coast of Florida. But yeah, today's been a great episode. I think that pretty much wraps us up. If you guys have anything else.
Yeah. I mean, if anyone wants to create their own reef or sponsor Coral Outplant, you can also do that on the website for donating or come get engaged. So really highly encourage, you know, even at the least, share the message. If you hear this podcast and it spoke to you, share it. If you feel inspired, volunteer with a local environmental organization or use your skills to help make an impact in some way or another. So thanks again for having me, and anyone's welcome to reach out at any time.
Awesome. Thanks, Shelby.
Thank you, Shelby. See ya.
No problem.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Wild and Unprotected podcast, brought to you by Wildscape Productions. Follow us on social media at Wildscape Productions. For more information on our documentary series, Shoreline Stories, visit wildscapeproduction.com. Stay tuned for our future episodes, as we have so much more in store for Wild and Unprotected.